This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick on Twitter at OldFLA and visit his website, rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Florida Spectacular. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I had a spectacular weekend. We're recording a little bit earlier. We usually do Wednesdays. So this is a Monday. And I had a weekend that has kind of left me buzzing a little bit. For the first time ever, I've been to Springs all my life, but I've never actually shared the space with a manatee. And for the very first time, I swam with a manatee this weekend.
Oh, you know, that's highly illegal, right?
To swim with the manatee?
I mean, did you touch it?
No, heck no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then no, I guess you're cool.
Yeah, no, I gave it plenty of space.
Yeah, because they're huge.
Yeah. That's the first thing that dawned on me. You know, at first it was on the other side of the spring and, you know, it looks really small. And then you swim and there was it's a first magnitude spring. So there was a lot of flow and it was kicking and finally got right up next to it. And it's like, oh my God, I'm in the water with an elephant.
You are. You're swimming with an elephant. You're swimming with an elephant. And as long as your head does not look like Romaine, you should be cool.
So it was lying on the bottom, kind of just, you know, I don't know what it was doing. At first I thought it was sleeping, but then when I got nearby, it kind of rose up and took a gulp of air and went back down, which
it was meditating.
I guess so.
And you ruined it.
I know. Well, I was really trying hard not to mess with it. Like, I didn't want it to even know I was there, but it may not have, because I gave it lots of room. You know, I'm serious about that kind of stuff. I don't believe in messing with nature, but it was, you know, it's like, check that box on my life list. I got to swim with a manatee, and it was a wonderful day because it was Silver Glen Springs, which is in the Ocala National Forest, and I hadn't been there in decades, but the water was just so pretty. Some of the water in some of the springs is just really green these days, but it was this beautiful shade of blue. It was as pretty a spring as I've been to in a very long time. And because of the time of the year, I was the only one even close to the spring. There had been people there in wetsuits earlier, but they had left by the time I got in the water. So it was just me and the manatee.
What was the air temp this weekend?
It was in the 50s when I was there.
That's got to feel good getting into the spring, but getting out of the spring feels like it would be problematic.
It was tough. I will say that. I was telling Chad, our engineer, that I'd left all my stuff, my towel and everything on a picnic table and walked over to the spring with my snorkel and swim fins. And, you know, getting in is always a shock, but it wasn't as bad as it is on a hot summer day. And the water didn't feel, it felt pretty comfortable. It was a little chilly, but, you know, enough so that I could kind of do a circuit. But getting out was brutal. And once I got my towel, I felt okay. But then I went to a friend who was running a cabin in the forest, and it was probably a half hour before I stopped shivering.
Yeah, that's years ago. I was kayaking on Rainbow River, and it was like November, and I jumped in. Honestly, I think I probably just had to pee or something, and then it became clear I was not getting out. I was not getting out until I got to the end because it was brutal. But, you know, manatee, that's nice. I was old before I saw my first manatee. I was in my late teens. Now I think kids see manatee all the time, but when I was growing up in Florida, definitely not a regular sighting at all. Have I talked about my first manatee sighting?
I know I talked about mine, so we may have covered this ground before. And, you know, it wasn't part of the consciousness in Florida like it is now. They're everywhere. I think a lot changed when Jacques Cousteau did his special, largely shot at Volusia Blue Spring. And, you know, Save the Manatee became a big thing. And, you know, when they started dying, I think we became more aware of them. And Which is good. I mean, the awareness is a good thing to help ensure their survival.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, they don't help themselves. And I don't mean that unkindly. I have worked part-time on a lot of tourist boats where we take people out to see dolphin. And yeah, you see dolphin. And I can't tell you the number of times on these boats I've seen the dolphin do something that humans perceive as cute. They flip, they slap their tail, they frolic. I'm putting air quotes around frolic because it's really not that great of a thing to see. But we'll do that later on the podcast about why dolphin are evil. But, you know, tourists love it. And then we have a manatee viewing center by comparison. We have a manatee viewing center here. The thing is called the Tico. It's in Apollo Beach. And when it's cold, the water from the power plant, it's warm. So the manatee go there to, you know, help not die of hypothermia. And I went there once just to see what was it like, because I was seeing enough manatee on the water that it wasn't really a thing I had to go out of my way to see. But I was curious about the viewing center. And I just remember standing next to this guy and he goes, well, that's really boring. And, you know, well, I mean, and I think I just looked at him and said, well, not to them. And also, if you grew up here, this is why, you know, poor guy. If you grew up here, you would understand how cool it is that there are so many of these here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's not like they have the genetically plastered on their face smile like the dolphins do. They don't flip around. They just kind of hang out and, you know, every now and then the snout comes out of the surface, or they'll go back beneath the surface, or, you know, if you're really lucky, manatee flatulence.
The only time I think I've ever heard of them being somewhat animated is when they're feeling amorous and people report seeing them, I guess, in shallow waters, and, you know, and having like manatee orgies and things going that appear to be like that. And, you know, I've heard stories of
that. We don't judge.
No, it's all good. And I did see one time I went to Volusia Blue Spring and there was a ton of manatees and there were some kind of cavorting around the head spring itself. And I don't know why, because I don't think it was their mating season, but it kind of reminded me of a Busby Berkeley musical. I always talk about that when I give talks. Oh. It was okay. Like synchronized swimming around the head spring, but the length of the run, it's a very long spring run. They were just kind of floating along like potatoes.
So, potato is a good word. Sea potatoes.
Sea potatoes. That's what they are.
They're sea potatoes. I have I always think of potatoes when I see manatee. I think they're adorable. I was at Sebastian Inlet State Park a couple of years ago and there was one just kind of hanging out in the water close by and periodically breathing. I mean, they're not, you know, it was just kind of like he or she would, or they would pop the snout out and then just kind of chill. And the water was so clear. I just stood there from the shore and could see the whole animal, but not, they're not peppy.
No.
You know, I mean, when you say Busby Berkeley, and at least you can say it because I can't, I think of these very animated women twirling in the water. And I mean, I don't know if you would say that a manatee is really up to their level of energy, but it's okay. I like them anyway. You know, they're not doing great.
Them. No, there's 6,300, I think, is what I'm looking at.
That's how many are left?
In Florida, just in Florida.
Well, where else would they would be? Where else? Oh, my God, I need more coffee. I'm going to put all the words in the right order this time. Where else would they be other than Florida?
Well, they're called West Indian manatees because I always assumed there would be stuff, you know, in Cuba and places like that in the Caribbean. But I don't know. I don't know enough about them. You know, their numbers are hit pretty hard. So when you think about it, you know, the population, you know, it's between 6,000 and 7,000, I think. If like Volusia Blue, our engineer Chad was there a couple of weeks ago, there might be hundreds of them there. You're seeing a large segment of in the entire population when you go to these places, like the place at Apollo Beach that you went to.
Oh, yeah. You know, thick.
that's part of, I think, the appeal is that, you know, you could practically walk across the spring run or the beach or whatever on the backs of these things. They're so prolific, but you know, you're seeing them in large numbers, and you might assume they're it's like that everywhere, but that's a big segment of the population.
So, they're very easily, how do you say this? Like, there's a lot of different ways the population of the manatee are getting attacked, yeah. Right? So algae, okay, like the same thing that is so toxic to our springs is also hurting, you know, their food source, right? So there's not enough natural seagrasses left in a lot of areas for them to eat. I don't know if algae would be the same type of algae, right?
Algae can choke out the native submerged underwater vegetation so that seagrass and stuff like that can't grow because the algae's blocking the light if it gets too thick.
So we had this brilliant idea last year that what we were going to go throw lettuce in the water for these guys.
Yeah, I think we did it for 2 years because in some places like in Indian River Lagoon, where they historically have gone in large numbers, there's just no seagrass left.
Right.
So they had to do it. And I don't think it was successful enough for them to continue it, which is a good thing. And I think hopefully some of the seagrass is coming back, but it's tough. I'm putting in the chat some of the pictures I took if you want to see the manatee. And that's the other thing I was noticing when I first looked at the pictures, like, I don't see any scars on this guy because, you know, that's the other thing that's so detrimental to manatee health is the motorboats. And then I looked close at his tail and I could see some scars. Because that's how they identify individual manatees now, is by the scars on their back and their tails.
Well, so I had a boat captain tell me something once. And of course, if a boat captain says it, it's always true. but he said he had been at a manatee, I don't want to say a seminar, but some kind of event. And FWC, that's the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, was presenting. And they said that it isn't so much the prop strikes. Hmm. It's the compression industry, an injury. When a boat goes over a manatee, it crushes them. I mean, there can be internal bleeding if you think about it, pressing the manatee down. Yeah, it's so you got boats, you got prop strikes, you've got a lack of a food source. And then when we do have cold, we have manatee mortality. 2010 was coldest. Was that the coldest recorded winter on record in Florida?
I don't know.
100 years or ever. And it was bad. That was incidentally the only time in my life that I have ever lived in a building without heat. It was great. I would turn the heat on my oven and crack it, and that was how I it was an illegal apartment, so I didn't pay the electricity and I didn't care, but you know, I was living on the beach, I was happy. So
an illegal apartment.
Yeah, it was a studio apartment, and it was built on the back of another apartment.
Interesting.
And it was 12 by 17. It was a small apartment. So thankfully that little tiny oven, which was a mini oven, it was one step above the easy bake oven you use when you're a kid to make brownies, you know, with a very warm light bulb. It was slightly larger than that. So it didn't take much to heat, but yeah, it wasn't submetered for power or water. So anyway, that winter when I was crewing on some sailboats, we would show up and there would be fish, dead fish on the water. Ugh. And it wasn't red tide. It was too cold.
Wow.
I mean, they were just dying. And so what we saw that year were a lot of manatee deaths because manatee can go over to that Tico viewing center and stay nice and cozy all day, but they still have to go out and eat. And nobody thought, hey, you know, it's, 20 degrees in Florida, in central South Florida, maybe we should think about these manatee and throw them some lettuce so they don't need to go out in that water. And what happened was the manatee don't want to be cold any more than we do. So they would stay there until they were really, really hungry. And then they would go out, and because they had waited so long to go out to eat because it was so cold, they didn't have the same amount of body fat, and they were actually dying from the cold.
Oh, that's
So,
heartbreaking.
I mean, it just it's that, it just, I feel like the poor thing can't get out of its own way.
No.
But these pictures you took are beautiful. We're definitely using one for a show picture. I was trying to find one I had taken of a snout, but these are gorgeous. And I can tell from the middle shot you sent that manatee was definitely meditating. He looked very zen.
It was, one of those quintessentially Florida experiences that just, I'm starting this year off so great and just I felt so alive. And that's, I think that's Florida spectacular at its highest zenith. That's it doesn't get much better than that, And it was just me and this guy, there was some they have kind of a sloping area to get down into the water, and there was people way over there, but it was just me and this guy. There's another area I wanted to try to go to. It's called the Well. It's another spring, and it attracts mullet that just swim there. And that's the other creature that was there in large numbers was school of mullet. And you would swim through them, and I got great pictures of the mullet too. And I never even made it to the well. I was so enchanted with the manatee. And there may have been more out in the spring run, but I didn't stay in the water long enough. I know people who are serious spring hoppers who will spend hours there, and they have wetsuits and things, and they'll swim up and down the spring run because that's where you're likely to see larger numbers of manatees.
The one thing I would like you to address, Rick, this is very important.
Okay.
I am not a man, and I like women. I mean, I like men. I don't like women. So to me, when I look at a manatee, I see a big sea potato. However, we have all these stories about how sailors would look at manatee and think mermaid. Can you, as a man, explain to me exactly what part of that sea potato is so sexy to people? Because I don't get it.
I think so imagine you're at sea, so you're probably not going to see the whole body of the manatee because the water's not that clear, and it's not the clarity of the water, it's there's normally always a chop. That's the they're not getting in there with swim fins and a mask and a snorkel, so they're seeing it from above the surface of the water, so they probably only see its head, or maybe its fluke, or what is that what you call it, the
I
tail,
believe you call the tail the fluke,
the
yes.
fluke.
Well, if you see the
So
head, they have a lot of whiskers, so I don't know what that says about what sailors like.
if you see it up close, if you see it from a distance, and you just see this silhouette breaking the horizon of the water, it's not that if you saw it from a distance. The size of it is approximately the size of a human head, just their nose sticking up. If you saw it from a distance, I think up close you'd have to recognize the error of your ways. And I think it's probably not big enough to, look like a whale because the whale, usually you see that kind of larger area in the blowhole stick up. You just see kind of a nose with the manatee just stick up. And I think maybe that's what they saw. Also, they've been at sea for a long time, not eating well. Their health probably wasn't good. They were a little delirious. So I think they probably saw the tail and that in the nose and made the leap.
And maybe they were drunk.
Maybe they were drunk.
All that fine rum. Okay, I've always looked at manatee. I'm like, I don't understand how a man could look at that and go, man, that is a hot sea nymph right there. So I appreciate you.
Well, I also want to clarify this that, there's a whole thing about manatees not necessarily being sexy. I mean, not manatees, mermaids being sexy. There's plenty of terrifying mermaids out there,
Yes, well, mermaids were at first terrifying.
or
So that's
terrifying either.
terrifying, yeah, the electric mermaid. But there's no, I mean, also there's nothing about a manatee that terrifies me, honestly.
It is enormous. I was overwhelmed by the size because I've never been in the water with anything that large. I've never swam with dolphins or done any of that kind of stuff. And I probably swam with alligators I didn't know were there. Let's hope not. If it was an alligator, I wouldn't even gotten anywhere close because those
Well,
they're just so
no.
scary. But it was a large creature, and It was very peaceful, but I didn't want to disturb it. I didn't want to get close. I have worked with people, and as part of the Springs Eternal project, Dr. Leslie Gamble got this incredible video where she's staying still and a manatee is curious about her and gets closer and closer and closer and closer, and then kind of almost gives her a kiss. You can see the manatee's lips and teeth. It gets that close. And she made a remarkable video called Swimming Through Air, I believe. And it used to be on Vimeo. I can't find it anymore, but it was, she did this whole, it was underwater footage shot in Gilchrist Blue Springs mostly to the Florida Suite by Frederick Delius that was written along the St. John's River by this 19th century composer. And they performed it in Gainesville with a live orchestra, and they showed this wonderful footage of the manatee getting closer and closer and closer, and then kind of kissing her camera. It was remarkable because they do get curious about us underwater sometimes.
Well, wouldn't you be curious too?
Yeah, I will have to wonder how smart they are.
Wow, that's some shade right there, Rick.
Well, I think a lot of mammals are very intelligent. I think birds are more intelligent than we have. The whole thing about bird brain, crows can solve problems and use tools and things like that that we used to only, attribute to higher intelligence. We know crows can do that. If there's a little piece of food in a tube, they can get a piece of stick and get the food out with a stick. That's and we know mammals are smart too. I think, it's one of the reason why
Some
I don't
mammals.
like pigs. Pigs are intelligent critters and they're adorable. Little piglets are adorable. I don't need pork. So I
Okay.
wonder about manatee intelligence. I think elephants are probably smart, and it breaks my heart when I hear about people killing them for their ivory. So I know their mammals or manatees are closely related to elephants. Just how smart they are. It's an interesting question for me, anyways.
Well, it seems like it's also something that UF is looking at. But
Probably.
yes, manatees can be trained to perform simple tasks, although I don't know why we would want to. There's a whole article about this with UF, and I'm not really sure where they land on it, and I'm not going to read it now, but at least they care. But and somebody's studying these poor things. But they always did remind me of elephants. They're related, right?
Yeah, they actually have kind of toenails on their flippers, like an elephant. If you look at the close up of their flippers, they kind of look like elephant feet.
And nipples in their armpits.
So the two
Kind of
band
a weird
names,
creature.
this two band names we came up with this segment would be the Electric Mermaids and the Armpit Nipples.
I think Armpit Nipples is a great band name. Great band name.
You got to be a punk band, I think.
Well, it's better than a possum that has 13 nipples arranged in a circle.
Possum nipples. That could be like the new Southern culture on the skids. It'd be possum nipples.
It's don't underestimate the possum.
We digress. We should
We did.
tell people where they can go see manatees. This is the time of year to go, I think,
Yes.
because they spread out when it's warmer. So the big place is Crystal River. They had That's where you can go and swim with them. But don't touch them, don't mess with them, just observe them from a
They
distance.
actually, when I swam with them, they encouraged us to touch them.
That's just wrong.
Apparently, it's not illegal if you do it for education.
Well,
I
I
would
can't
encourage you
condone
not to.
that.
I will also tell you, it is profoundly disappointing to pet a manatee. It is nothing like petting your little dachshund or your cat.
They don't look at you with love in their eyes. They don't purr.
No, they do not purr. They tolerate you at best. Although I want to point out that if you go to swim with the manatee this time of year, they will be in the spring head,
Yeah.
which is the coldest part of the spring, but it is your best chance of seeing them underwater when you pet them. I went in the summer and they had us jump into black water because they had seen a snout. And I joke that the only reason I know I petted a manatee was that it didn't attack and kill me, so it couldn't have been a gator. But
Yeah, now's the time to go. Don't wait till summer.
Blue Springs State Park too.
Yeah, but you can't swim with them there, but they have
No, and you
a long
shouldn't
walkway.
really.
Yeah.
Why would you want to? Indian River, is that still a pretty good place, or are they
Well,
decimated
so
there?
there's a place over there called Hallover Canal near Titusville. It connects the Mosquito Lagoon in the Indian River, and there's a manatee observation area there. You know, there's, you know, like a lot of places along the coast in Florida, there's a lot of canals. And I know throughout those canals, there are people who will put their hoses down to the water when it's cold so the
Yes.
manatee has fresh water to drink. And, you know, my brother used to live over there and he used to see them just full of in the canals during the wintertime. But there's a number of places where there's power plants in addition to Apollo Beach where you can go see them this time of year. There's one in Fort Myers and there's another one in Riviera Beach, which I guess is in Palm Beach County.
Basically, any fresh water is going to be okay this time of year. It's just the spring heads are the warmest parts of the river, so that's if you're by a decent spring, you should be able to see them pretty easily.
I've seen them, you know, places not, where they're not in a spring, and all you're going to see, because usually there's a ripple on the water, is, you know, the snout when they come up for a breath, or occasionally, you know, their tail. If the springs are great because the water is so clear, and so like at Volusia Blue Spring, you can get a little elevation so you can look down on them in the spring run. And you know, it's beautiful. The color of the water there is kind of more greenish than the blue that I saw this past weekend. But it's still a beautiful scene, you know, these potatoes floating in this kind of Kool-Aid green water. It's not that green, but it's kind of aqua colored, maybe. It's one of those Florida things. You know, when I grew up in Gainesville, and when people came to visit us, we went to Lake Alice on the University of Florida campus because we were guaranteed to show them a gator there pretty much every time. And so that, you know, think about the animals associated with Florida. You've got the alligators, you got manatees, you got the flamingo, and that's what you want to see. That's Florida panther, which, you know, you got to get really lucky to see.
And yeah, that's also one of those encounters that, could go wrong, like the
Yeah,
gator. Like
it goes sideways fast.
it can go sideways fast, and sure, you could probably get away with killing a panther in self-defense, but do you want to go through the rest of your life knowing you might have doomed a species to extinction because you were too stupid to keep a healthy distance from one of the most endangered animals in the world?
No, of course not. Did you see that video of it was several years ago? Somebody's walking, you know, maybe in Corkscrew Swamp or something on a boardwalk, and there's a panther there, jumps up and it starts running towards them and then veers off at the last second. Do you remember that video? It went viral.
I do not.
Oh, it's so exciting. And what do? You think about that. You know, you're on a boardwalk, swamp either side, and there's railings. All of it. I had a similar experience with a buffalo in Yellowstone where I was on a boardwalk and the buffalo jumped on the boardwalk with me and it's coming right at you. What do you do?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I can tell you that when my house cats get feisty, if I can grab their back legs, it helps. But I think a panther, I mean, we're dealing with the scale issue here. Like my little 8-pound Hobie cat kitten there, I just grab her back legs and she can't really fight too hard. But I don't think that that's quite the case with the panther. I don't know. Meow at them? I honest to God don't know. I don't know what to do. I mean, look, honestly, y'all, if you are attacked by a panther, it's just your time.
Have you heard of any cases of anyone in Florida being attacked by a Florida
No,
panther? I
and
haven't
in
either.
fact, some of the justifications we used 2 centuries ago to hunt and kill the panther as much as we did, I remember looking at some research that said there weren't actually very many documented cases of panther attacks then.
Yeah. I think it was more of issues with livestock. You know, I think that's why, you know, that's why they decimated the wolf population. That's why they used to hunt panthers and cougars and things like that. It's unfortunate they should have been hunting all those feral pigs instead.
Yeah, I mean, the pigs are a lot tastier too. But according to Friends of the Florida Panther, which is floridapanther.org, there are no documented incidences of it.
Interesting.
Yes. And, you know, manatee too. I don't think there's ever been a manatee attack.
No, I don't think so. There have been bear attacks, and bears sometimes do get little dogs. It was interesting because I was the other part of this my trip this weekend. I was hiking the Yearling Trail, and I was deliberately looking for bear. I wanted to see bear. I wanted to see them at a distance. I didn't want to see them close, but I would love to have seen one. And even though that's an animal that possibly could attack you, and I know from our guest last week, you're supposed to run if you encounter them. Because it's all I always get mixed up. Are you supposed to make yourself big? I think when you see a cougar or a panther, you're supposed to make yourself look really big so it doesn't think you're a small little prey. But with bears, I guess you're supposed to run and not climb a tree. That's what we talked about last week.
Right. We talked about not climbing a tree because bears climb trees every day. Most of us have not climbed trees in a while. I get it. Well, to end this week's podcast, we have a letter. But
Oh, cool.
before we do, I want to end with one of the most ridiculous things I believed until so recently, it's embarrassing. When I read about the West Indian manatee as a child, when I first learned about the manatee, I thought that West Indian meant that the manatee also lived in West India.
Oh, you mean in Asia?
Yeah, as opposed to the Indies. No one ever explained that to 7-year-old Kathy or 8-year-old Kathy. So for a long time, decades even, I assumed that there were manatee in off the west coast of India. So which there may be, but that's not what the name means.
Yeah, there are other type of the dugongs, I think they call, and they're related, but that would have been a hell of a migration. You had to
We shall not speak of this again.
go around the tip of Africa down by Antarctica and come all the way up. That's a hell of a long way.
It really was an incredible migration, man. So
We
you
won't
can laugh.
hold that. We won't
No,
hold that against you.
but just want to point that out that sometimes our names are confusing for people, even very smart people. So our letter, Barry Anderson. My name is Barry Anderson. I'm an artist living in Central Florida. I just discovered your podcast today, and I am now a new fan. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Barry.
How did he find us? I love this part. I typed in Florida B movies and found your fun podcast on the subject and what looks like many other interesting topics that I look forward to listening to. I'm not going to read the whole letter, but he worked in the film and television industry in South Florida in the 80s. He was a makeup effects artist. And he said our podcast made him reflect on his career and think, wow, I've really worked on some weird, bad, and strange B films through the year. He notes that it wasn't a career goal, but he did not work on Creature from the Black Lagoon, but he did reaffirm what I say that it is a great Florida B movie. And he just really enjoyed that podcast. And he worked on The Day of the Dead. If you've ever,
Wow.
yeah. Sacred, Scared Stiff, The Unholy Horror, Mr. Nanny, which is probably, it's a Hulk Hogan film, so it's a horror movie of a different type. Jeepers Creepers, the remake of Hairspray. So, I mean, he's been all over the place.
Wow.
And he also made props for Ripley's Believe It or Not museums.
I think he's a potential guest.
I mean, he was fascinating. His letter goes on, and the more I read it, I'm like, we should just ask this guy to come talk about it. I mean, I'll do a whole podcast on Night of the Living, or was it Night of, no, what was it? The George Romero film. He said he worked on The Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead. That's like
Not,
the original, isn't it? Or is it
yeah,
Night of
night.
the Living Dead?
Well, The Day of the Dead, I don't think it's related to
Oh,
Night of the
okay.
Living Dead.
Okay. There's a lot of dead stuff going on
It's
there.
a lot of zombies. And it's, anyway, Barry Anderson, if you're listening, drop us an email again, Kathy@floridaspectacular.com. We want you to come and talk about Florida things with us. And everybody else who's listening, we love getting email.
Yes, we do. It's fun. It's funny because I was just talking yesterday, the Florida Humanities Council did a talk where they had a panel about their new book that they just put out. I guess we had Jackie on our podcast last month, and Gary Marmino was there, and so Eric Deggans was there. He is the NPR TV media critic for, you know, big NPR. He lives in St. Pete, and we were talking about the film industry in Florida, and he's another potential guest because he knows a ton about, you know, Florida's film, and not so much, you know, Creature of the Black Lagoon, 1950s and 60s, but the more recent past and TV shows shot in Florida. And we were talking about when I moved to Florida, it was really, you know, Hollywood East was ramping up, and how we kind of got away from that. And there's very little production here anymore. And a lot of places that are supposedly shot here in Florida are actually shot in either Georgia or New Orleans, unfortunately. But another potential interesting guest. We love hearing from the guests. That's great. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I was a great letter. I emailed him back and forth a few times. Really interesting guy. So, and I love that our longest listener letter to date was about one of my very favorite episodes, which is the B movie episodes. So,
well, that's inspiration to keep talking about the entertainment industry in Florida, I think.
Well, as long as Florida can keep being entertaining.
I don't think there's any chance of it not.
You never know. All right. Well, Rick, always a pleasure.
Have a good week.
Go find your manatee.
Exactly.
You love the Florida Spectacular podcast. I love it too. My name is Brad Bertelli. Kathy and I love Florida history. She views the Sunshine State as a whole. I've been studying and writing about the Florida Keys for more than two decades. The island chain is an amazing place to escape the world, to do a little fishing, diving, or snorkeling. The Florida Keys are home to tremendous histories, too. Wrecking on the Florida Reef, sponges, Henry Flagler and his overseas railroad, hurricanes, pineapples, the Perky Bat Tower, key lime pie. Kathy and I will explore these stories and so many more that make this island chain not just special, but legendary in our podcast, The Florida Keys Spectacular. We hope you join us.